This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Danny Meringue.
Dusty Bun.
Dusty Hera.
I've been really busy trying to save the world from Russians and monsters.
This is Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and Portland's sports leader.
Of course you have.
1080.
I want to hear it.
The Fan.
Hour number three here on a Wednesday on Danny and Dusty. Whether you're listening on 1080 AM, watching along at youtube.com/1080inthefan or twitch.tv/1080inthefan. We appreciate you. We love you. Thank you for hanging out with us on this glorious Wednesday, where it's like 20 degrees warmer than it was yesterday.
It was freezing last night.
It was. I told you, man. It was
pouring down
cold.
Rain. My Banks Braves are preparing for a semifinal game, and it was freezing cold in an inch of rain.
Yeah, where are you guys playing at?
Bend.
Is it going to be warm there?
No, like 29 degrees with a real feel temperature of 23.
Yeah. I still remember the summer I spent in Sun River.
Go Braves.
I drove down and it was like the last week of May when I got there and it was snowing.
Oh, sweet.
The night that I got there and the next week it was 80 degrees.
Oh, that's a turnaround.
Yeah.
I don't think it'll be 80 this weekend.
Definitely not. No. I think I mentioned before, my first deployment to Afghanistan, I landed, it was 89, 90 degrees. I was so out and I took an Ambien because my sleep schedule is so jacked. I slept for like 13, 14 hours. I woke up, there was a foot of snow on the ground.
Nope.
And I was like, oh, I can't do this. We can't. No, this is not okay. It cannot be 90 degrees when I go to bed and have a, like, I open the tent and the, like.
That's crazy.
I had to step up.
That's wild.
And I'm like, oh, this place sucks.
Yep.
All right. Speaking of things that don't suck. Football Hall of Fame. The Professional Football Hall of Fame, one of the harder halls to get into. Not the hardest. Major League Baseball, although I'm very interested to see where Major League Baseball goes as the game has changed drastically in the last couple of years. We are never going to see another 300-game winner in baseball.
No, the metrics are all changing for what is
success.
Deserving to get
yes.
in.
And it's going to be very interesting to see how that goes. But we have the 25 modern era player semifinalists for the class of 2025. And they are as follows.
Oh, boy. All of them?
Well, look, I mean, we gotta give everybody the names. I'll read them quick. Eric and Jared Allen, Willie Anderson, Anquan Boldin, Jari Evans, Antonio Gates, James and Rodney Harrison, Torrey Holt, Luke Kuechly, Eli Manning, Robert Mathis, Steve Smith Sr., Terrell Suggs, Fred Taylor, Earl Thomas, Adam Vinatieri, Hines Ward, Ricky Waters, Reggie Wayne, Richmond Webb, Vince Wilfork, Steve Wisniewski, Darren Woodson, and Marshall Yanda. It's a lot of really good players.
Yeah, it's the Hall of Fame that's really hard to get into, and those are the modern era guys, and that's why, like, the old timers list is always like, there's guys who are like, he wasn't in?
Yeah.
He's not in yet? But the problem with the NFL is that it's 3 to 5 every year in the modern players.
80% of the vote required.
And the game went sharply up in popularity. And now you have a bunch of guys that are getting in that the logjam is real. And it is huge in the National Football League. It just seems like for the first-year candidates, right, Eli, Luke Kuechly, Terrell Suggs, Adam Vinatieri, Earl Thomas.
Marshall Yanda.
Marshall Yanda. Six guys are first ballot guys. It does not feel like all of those guys retired at the same time.
No.
Like, in my mind, there's a big gap between Vinatieri and Luke Kuechly. There's a small gap between Kuechly and Suggs. And I'm like, and then it feels like Earl Thomas just was on a roster flipping off Pete Carroll.
And yet,
they're all eligible the very same year. And when you only have 3 to 5 in, this is where people start, you know, all right, this guy deserves in. He's the first ballot guy.
And
some tough ones.
I mean, here's your returning semifinalists. Bolden, Steve Smith, Hines Ward, Robert Mathis, Vince Wilfork, James Harrison, Debo, and Ricky Waters.
Yeah. Antonio Gates, Jared Allen, Torrey Holt, and Reggie Wayne were all finalists a year ago. So I sit there and I look at it and I go, all right, what do you do with this list? Because Eli Manning is a 2-time Super Bowl winner.
Mm-hmm.
He is wildly popular. His family's wildly popular. I don't think Eli Manning in this group is a first ballot Hall of Famer.
No.
And there's going to be a lot of people that are going to try and say Eli is a first ballot Hall of Famer. He's career 500 quarterback. He had two insane, and he beat the best team in modern NFL history in a Super Bowl. He knocked down the 18-0 New England Patriots
twice
in that Super Bowl. He beat them twice in the Super
Bowl.
He would
be
that
a
year
first ballot Hall of Very Good.
Yes. And is Eli Manning a Hall of Famer?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
But even of the first ballot guys, I don't even think he's in the top three. Or I think he is third. He's third. I think Luke Kuechly, Terrell Suggs are above Eli Manning for first ballot consideration. Eli probably does get in on the first ballot because there's so many of these voters that sniff the farts of the Manning family.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this might be an unfair comparison because somebody was the quarterback at the helm of a four-time Super Bowl champion, but Terry Bradshaw.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, baby. Look, he was the quarterback of a 4-time Super Bowl champion, but
he was also of one of the great dynasties in NFL history.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. And Eli was at the helm of a team that beat one of the greatest teams, one of the greatest dynasties in NFL history twice.
And he was insane in those playoffs.
Yeah.
But the body of work, even for Terry Bradshaw, he was not a 500 quarterback.
Joe Namath.
You know? Yeah, Joe Namath, right? And it's very similar. Played in New York. Joe Namath, the eras were completely different, though, too.
Yes.
Like,
yes,
the eras of passing and the numbers were completely different. But Joe Namath also, it wasn't like a very good team. It was like the first Super Bowls, right?
Yeah.
He was in those. And
he wore a fur coat.
It helped vault the league into popularity. You know, Eli didn't do that. Okay, how many years was Eli Manning a top three quarterback in the NFL?
None.
In his career?
None.
Okay, look, I'll put it this way. And
that, to me, is that first ballot?
No.
Like, I'm not saying Eli Manning deserved
again,
his
Hall
career
of
was
very
amazing.
Good. Hall of very good.
His career was amazing. And no, I think he is a Hall of Famer, but because the accomplishments that you accrue over your career, like, he has all of those. And Eli is a Hall of Famer, but they're going to try to push him through on a first ballot.
Yeah.
And at no point in his entire NFL career was he a top three quarterback in the league.
I guess I'll put it this way. And I think that you have just, in that last 60 seconds or so, changed my mind a bit in terms of an argument that I used to make with Baseball Hall of Fame and Rafael Palmeiro.
Mm-hmm.
Rafael Palmeiro, he was a very good player for his entire career. I don't think at any point was he ever a top three, top four.
One season.
What have you.
One season he was.
Right?
One season.
He didn't do steroids, though.
But not once. Finger wagger in front of Congress.
No, but in all seriousness, for one season, he was one of the five best players in baseball.
Yeah, well, okay, but largely, Palmeiro was a compiler.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think Eli's really a compiler.
No.
And like, here's the other thing. We're not even just with Eli. When you're talking about first ballot guys, there's two guys on here who have a legitimate argument. Terrell Suggs and Luke Kuechly.
On first ballot?
Of his first ballot guys.
Yeah.
Suggs is eighth all time in sacks and the number one tackle for loss leader in NFL history.
Seems good.
Okay. Now, was he ever the best defensive player in the league?
No, I don't even think he was like top three on his own team.
He did win Defensive Player of the Year once in 2011.
Yeah, he played on a defense with Ed Reed and
Ray Lewis.
Ray Lewis.
I was going to say, that statement feels just a touch unfair.
But you know,
he was never the top three on his own team, but because he was behind those two dudes.
You're talking about maybe the best middle linebacker in the history of the game.
Two other first ballot Hall of Famers.
Not just that. You're talking about maybe the best linebacker in the history of the game in Ray Lewis. Like, mm-hmm. that's one of them. Like, you can make the argument that he is that guy. If you mm-hmm. if you want to say Lawrence Taylor because he's a pass rusher, blah, 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 it's fine. I'm not going to argue with you. Ed Reed is the most disruptive safety in the history of the game.
Yeah. Yeah.
Haloti Ngata is one of the best interior defensive linemen the game has ever seen.
Yep.
Okay. Did Terrell Suggs benefit from that? Yes. But he also, when you talk about compiling, you're talking about a pass rusher that played for 17 years.
He was incredible. And I think that when you look at that, you can say, all right, maybe one of those two guys gets in, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then you look at Antonio Gates should be in. Jared Allen sure as hell should be in. Torrey Holt and Reggie Wayne, those two guys, I mean, Reggie Wayne should be in, no doubt. Torrey Holt should be in the Hall of Fame.
Yes.
Torrey Holt had 8 straight seasons of 1,000 yards receiving. He was on a team that transformed the passing game in the NFL as we know it in the greatest show on turf and was an instrumental piece of that, right? Alongside Isaac Bruce, Marshall Faulk, and Kurt Warner. Yes, if you say alongside those three guys, yeah, he should be the fourth one of those to get in the Hall of Fame. And he should be in and was a finalist a year ago, right? Like Torrey Holt, whoa. He was insane. And Reggie Wayne is in the same boat as he was alongside Marvin Harrison and Peyton Manning. But they made one of the best quarterback and receiver trios that you could have in the NFL's history.
It might sound silly to say, but I was going to say, alongside a Troy Aikman, Emmitt Smith, Michael Irvin.
Yep.
Yeah, when you talk about like the triplets. Yeah. The one that's interesting for me, and this is, I think there's a, you saw this already happen once with Patrick Willis. Remember, Patrick Willis just got in last mm-hmm. year. He had a career that he called short.
Yep.
Luke Kuechly's career, because he played in Carolina, I think is drastically underrated.
Yeah.
Drastically underrated. You want to talk about the best linebacker in the game.
Played in the Super Bowl.
He's that guy.
Well, if he had played for the Giants or the Jets or somebody like that,
we
would remember him differently.
Exactly.
You're talking about a guy who played 8 years in the NFL, okay? And in those 8 years, his rookie year, he's the defensive rookie of the year. His second year in the league, he is the defensive player of the year in
his
second year. All-pro first team, not Pro Bowler, all-pro first team 5 times in 8 years. And in the years that he wasn't an all-pro first team, he was his rookie year, and in 2016 and 2019, he was all-pro second team. So you're talking about the guy who was literally voted the best at his position, or the second best at his position, every single year in the league. Yep. If that's not the definition of Hall of Famer, I don't know what is.
Like, that's first ballot stuff, too.
You know what I mean?
That, I mean, and this is the dumb thing about Hall of Fames, is that you sit there and you're like, brah, we always fight over all these things, but look, if you either are or you aren't, and like Hines Ward is a Hall of Famer too. Hines Ward is a Hall of Famer,
and it's the other side of this on the accolades, because Hines doesn't have crazy accolades.
Well, his numbers aren't. Hines Ward was the best blocking receiver probably in the NFL's history.
Yeah,
in the NFL's history, he played receiver, he played running back, quarterback. Like, Hines Ward did everything for the Pittsburgh Steelers. And when they needed him the most is when he showed up the most, right? He wasn't a guy that was a diva by any stretch of the imagination. He was a guy that, when it came time, he performed. The Super Bowl against Seahawks in 2006, where, was it 5 for 123 and a touchdown? Mm-hmm. Also had a carry for 18 yards, pretty big carry too. He is a guy that continually rose when the stakes were the highest. Hines Ward, he should be a Hall of Famer.
Again, when you're talking about accolades, 4-time Pro Bowler, yep. three-time All-Pro second team. That the All-Pro side of this speaks to just how good wide receivers are,
yeah.
because the wide receivers we're talking about are guys like Steve Smith Sr. and Reggie Wayne and Torrey Holtz.
Think of who he played in the NFL at the same time as, right? It was Randy Moss, Isaac Bruce, Torrey Holt, Reggie Wayne, mm-hmm. Marvin
Harrison.
Yeah. Like, I mean, it was like a who's who, Terrell Owens. Like, he was at the position was never as good as when Hines Ward was there.
He's 28th overall in receiving yards and 54th in career touchdowns.
Yeah. Yeah.
Pretty insane numbers.
And this isn't his first ballot.
No.
You know, and, that's the thing. It's like he's not a first ballot guy, but spot in the hall. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I loved Hines Ward.
Oh, no. Fantastic player. But it's interesting when you take a look at this list. Does a guy like Debo get in, James Harrison?
Eventually.
You think so?
I don't.
He was insanely dominant for stretches.
He gets in the workout Hall of Fame. I'll give him that.
Here's a question. Can I ask this?
Yeah.
Do we make too much of a deal about being a first ballot Hall of Famer versus somebody who just makes it in?
Yeah, because there's a prestige thing to it,
but do we tie too much to that?
I don't think so, because there is a differentiation between the two.
Yeah, there is. I mean, it is when you are a first ballot guy, it is telling of you are the best of the absolute best. You are the 1% of the guys who are in the Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
Like that yes. is what, and that's why Eli should not be a first ballot guy.
And I think we agree with.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, once you're in and, you know, give it 10, 15, 20 years down the line, is it like, oh, wait, he wasn't a first ballot guy.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, when you're talking about the greatest of all time, that's the kind of like the dividing line.
Yeah, true. It is.
Genuinely.
It really is.
So it's an interesting one. We'll see where this goes as far as which way the voting goes. I there's a couple other guys on here who, you know, like Darren Woodson, who was another part of those Cowboys teams, who was insanely good. But, you know, he's the fourth best player on that defense, much like Terrell Suggs, because you go back to those Cowboys teams and you go look at those defenses and you go, oh, right. The aforementioned Deion Sanders was playing corner.
They're really good.
They're really good.
Jerry's just chasing it again. Just, I want it. Yeah. I'm going to pay everybody. You can't do it anymore.
So, all right. Coming up next, Dusty alluded to it a little bit earlier. JJ Redick as a head coach for the Los Angeles Lakers. Is he pushing all the right buttons or things going their way just because they're going their way in the Lakers? We'll get that more on Danny and Dusty, Danny the Fan.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
First-time head coach JJ Redick has Los Angeles Lakers 10-4 after their victory last night in the NBA Cup, which is an interesting spot because they lost 4 of 5 before now winning 3 straight.
Yeah, they were 4-4.
Six straight. Thank you.
They were 4-4 though to start. Mm-hmm. The season, and now 10-4, and it's like, okay, how's JJ Redick doing? Because this is an interesting case study. Guy who's never coached, goes from podcast and analyst into one of the biggest roles in the NBA.
It's the biggest job.
Yeah.
It is. So, number one, from the jump, I thought JJ was going to be a good coach because he's a lunatic. His preparation as a player is legendary. Okay. Like the stuff that he went through, his podcast company, 342, 342 shots. That's what he took every single pregame as part of his room out routine.
I didn't know that. Workout
routine. Yes. It was a total number of shots he took from all of the different spots. It was part of a plan that he put together. They make a joke about JJ's preparation and how tied to the bit, as it were, of like everything being the same in that FX show Clipped. The guy playing him has his, like, the Lawrence Fisherman playing Doc Rivers. JJ's irritated about something, and they're like, Doc's like, yeah, did you give him his sandwich? It's 4:30. Like, because he was so regimented about when he would eat and how he would eat.
I'm so glad I didn't watch that show.
Oh, yeah. But I mean, like, there was a nod to it because JJ's a lunatic and his preparation is otherworldly. It genuinely is. And for those not old enough, JJ Redick was a can't miss guy coming out of Duke.
Well, because he literally could not miss.
He could not. He made
everything.
And he had reality punch him in the face very, very, very quickly in the NBA as his athleticism just wasn't enough anymore.
Yep.
And so he had to go from being like a number one option to being a role player. And the scouting and the preparation and everything that went into that made him a very, very intelligent player. He had to take his lumps.
Like, funny how that works with a lot of Dukies.
Look, man, they also are very smart. Like, you could say what you want about that.
Oh, they're
that,
all smart. They're
that,
all,
I mean, yeah. I mean that era is what I'm talking about specifically. A guy like Shane Battier,
who
is the bad box score all-star. Like, oh, it's Shane Battier had 3 points and four rebounds, but like his plus-minus was plus 30 tonight. You're like, huh. There's actually the box score plus-minus metric, not just the plus-minus, but it takes everything that goes into a box score night in, night out. The analytics say that Shane Battier was just as impactful on a game as a guy like Kobe Bryant over their career.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's nuts because, like, when you have that many games to go through, that much data, and you're like, huh, that's weird. Was Shane Battier always on good teams, or did Shane Battier make teams better? You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
JJ Redick kind of evolved into that guy on the offensive end of, like, he ended up making teams better. And a lot of that just kind of goes with his brain. And now, here's the flip side of all this. The Lakers were struggling, and then they played, hold on, the Sixers, the Raptors, the Grizzlies, the Spurs, the Pelicans, and the Jazz. That is, by record, the worst, the second worst, the third worst, and fourth worst teams in the NBA in their last six.
Okay.
So, are the Lakers better with J.J. Redick than they were with Darvin Ham? I think unequivocally, yes, because, number one, they don't hate him.
And LeBron still likes him.
Yes.
I think that's the big one. Like, everybody else could hate him. You lose LeBron, you lose
everything. But he has done some tactical things as far as, like, Anthony Davis, I believe he's still leading the league in scoring. If not, he's right behind Giannis.
You said something about him, though, that I think it rings true with a lot of the conversations that we've had about Chauncey Billups, though, in that what separated Chauncey as a player, he was still really, really athletic and gifted.
Mm-hmm.
But that was what he was always praised for, was between the years. Yep. And this is one thing that I just can't get through, is the Blazers roster-wise has not been there. They have not been good enough to win.
Nor have they made any sense.
At a high level or any level. Mm-hmm. And they've lived up to that. But I think what we've been seeing is, especially this season, and it's a small sample size, they are maximizing the skill sets of the guys. And as you said, the roster didn't make sense. It makes more sense now from a construction standpoint than it did before. But you're starting to see Chauncey's imprint is on this team now. And nobody wanted to give him credit for that. And I still think there's a lot of people that aren't giving him credit.
They will
to be
never
quite,
do
yeah,
it.
To be quite honest, they never will give him credit for that. But it's in the same vein as what you were talking about with JJ, is that is what separates the better coaches in the NBA that were former players. They are the ones that continue to be mentally engaged in the X's and O's, and that's what they were gifted at as players.
Mm-hmm. And again, this is when I talk about, like, the coaching in the NBA not being as impactful everywhere else, there's certain things you can do to be impactful.
Yeah.
One of them is to get buy-in. One of them is to be an otherworldly tactician, which JJ is. JJ is in the is in the vein of an Eric Spoelstra. A dude who's watched more film than anyone on this planet. That's what he did, right? There's certain strings you can pull, and there's other guys that are good motivators. There's guys that are a little bit of both, and to me, unless you have the highest end talent, it's not that impactful, which again, you see Anthony Davis, and he's currently second in the league in scoring. So I was mistaken. He's just behind Giannis at 30.7. But also last night,
Giannis going for 59 the other day, probably helpful.
But also last night, did JJ Redick coach Dalton connect, or did they just press the play better button?
Press the play better button.
For those that are unaware, Dalton Connect tied the rookie record last night with 9 made threes. He was 9 of 12 from three. He scored 21 points in under 5 minutes.
And I think Reddit kept calling a play that says, put the ball in the bucket.
Will Hardy had the best comment after the game. The head coach of the Utah Jazz said, everyone except for a few people in the entire arena knew that Dalton Connect was going to shoot every time. It's just too bad that those few guys were on our team.
I love Will.
You want to talk about a bus being driven over your team?
Will gives zero bleeps.
Yeah.
Like, he is one of my favorite. Look, and this is, again, this is going beyond, and I think this ties us back to Portland. I have been an advocate of not bringing in a new coach this season, not because I think Chauncey is this wonderful coach and he's going to solve everything, because I don't want to bring a new coach into this knowing what is going to happen.
Ooh,
because Will Hardy is going through it right now, and he is pissed. He is angry. He does not like what is happening in Utah right now.
Well, look, who brought him in?
Danny Ainge.
Okay. From Boston, mm-hmm. where Will Hardy was an assistant. Mm-hmm. The one thing about Danny Ainge, they are cut from the exact same cloth. The thing that everybody hated about Danny Ainge as a player is exactly what makes him a very damn good executive, mm-hmm. which is he will tell you exactly how it is. He will let you know his feelings, mm-hmm. and he has a coach that mirrors that.
Yep, and with Will Hardy, he doesn't want to lose. Even if he knows organizationally the best thing that could happen for them is to end up in the Cooper Flagg sweepstakes or Ace Bailey sweepstakes, because they, like Portland, they don't have that Northern Star.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they don't have that thing. Like, Taylor Hendricks, who was supposed to be a guy for them this year, had a devastating leg injury.
That was gnarly, and I'm glad I still haven't seen it.
Oh, you've avoided it still. Okay, good for you.
Still avoided it.
It's, again, a horrific injury in the same vein as Yusuf Nurkic. It's a disgusting fracture. But he was going to be a guy that was going to get a lot of run this year. You know, now they're going to throw out Cody Williams and Keyonte George, and they're going to try and do some things. But they're going to be one of the three worst teams in the league. Like, they're going for, like, there's no misconceptions about the tank. Uh-uh. They're starting out of the gate, like, we're going to go for this. Will Hardy was not brought in for that.
Nope. They wanted him to win.
And that is the thing that I've always said, like, I don't want to bring my coach that I'm going to build with and ask him to take 50 losses on the chin. It doesn't work out. Those guys are, you don't want that.
No.
That's ultimately where I end up on that. All right, coming up next, we got some college football news and notes to get to, including more crying from former national champions.
Oh, boy.
But first, here's the big kahuna with the Sports Zone update.
That's that Hawaiian burger joint.
As the world of college football keeps changing and turning and twirling and whirling, we're in a world where you're going to find a ton of college football coaches, particularly the old-timey ones, getting more and more whiny?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
I mentioned it earlier. Kirby Smart continuing to whine.
Yeah, I understand where Kirby's at right now. This is about that, like what we talked about with the rankings that came out.
Mm-hmm.
This is where the SEC's messaging, they get it right. Right? It is, he knows that his team at 8-2 ranked 10th, they're on the fringe.
Mm-hmm.
They are on the fringe. So what do you do?
You got to go to war.
You make enough noise to make sure that you are present.
Mm-hmm.
You don't hear this out of SMU. SMU is 9-1 right now.
Mm-hmm.
And their coach isn't sitting there going, hey, we play 9 conference games. Maybe they play 9 conference games. Look at what we have to go through, right? You haven't heard that.
No. And a big part of that is, even though it's the ACC is part of ESPN, the SEC is ESPN college football.
Yeah. And, you know, we haven't heard from Mario Cristobal saying, well, if one loss to a team that isn't, you know, a top 25 team is a disqualifier, then or bumps you down the rankings, then what is Ole Miss doing? Ole Miss lost to Kentucky, right? Alabama lost to Vanderbilt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we lost one game and it was to Georgia Tech. Everything else, we have taken care of the schedule that's in front of us, right? The SEC, they know how to own the messaging. And by doing it, it's largely playing the victim, right? Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of woes me.
Oh, we've got it tougher than everybody else. You couldn't imagine.
It's the anti-Harbaugh. Who's got it worse than us? Yeah. Nobody.
Yeah, right? I mean, and it's the way that they operate, and it's the way they always have operated. And it works. It works. And if anybody else from any other conference were to do it right now, because of what the SEC has built. And look, make no mistake about it, they largely get away with it because they win all the titles, right? They win titles. They're always there at the end, right? And so you can get away with it. But this year, you look at the SEC and you say, there's a lot of really damn good football teams there.
Mm-hmm.
But what they're complaining about, it ain't it, boss.
No, and beyond that, you move a little way over to a team that might be in the SEC sooner rather than later. Over in the old ACC with Dabo. Dabo decided to complain about the potential cut down on what to his roster down to 105.
It's very simple. Like, you know, first of all, you know who definitely has to leave, so that makes it easy. And then basically anybody that's fourth year, that if you know you're not coming back, like we have to cut a lot of guys this year. You know, we have, you know, a lot. It's terrible. It's the worst thing in my whole coaching career and what's going on. But you know, we've got to cut a bunch of kids that have been in our program. So I've given all of them an option. If they are, you know, a fourth year, then they have the option to be honored as a senior. You know, they've earned that. And some of these kids would be back for their fifth year next year, and they're not going to have the opportunity to do that. And that's sad, but that's the way it is. It's very simple.
Dabo complaining about this is kind of eye roll worthy on the surface.
Okay. First of all, 105 is more than enough.
Yeah, the current roster limit is, I think it's 100, and it might be like 130, and then once you get into the season, it has to go down to like 120.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So what he's talking about, though, is you only have 84 scholarships.
Mm-hmm.
What is the legislation that's moving forward is that there's going to be 105 players on the roster. They are all going to be scholarship players.
Yes.
So you get 21 more scholarships,
mm-hmm.
right? He is complaining that where he said, like, the four-year guys who'd come back for a fifth year, those are all the walk-ons, that red shirt, and they're there, and they play at Clemson because they love Clemson.
Mm-hmm.
They play for Clemson University, and they don't have the NFL pipe dreams. They are walk-ons mm-hmm. through and through. And he's talking about guys. We're not talking about guys like Bryce Betcher.
I was saying, this is Bryce Betcher, yeah.
Who is a finalist for the Burlsworth Trophy to the best walk-on in college football. Bryce Betcher is a scholarship player now, mm-hmm. but he was a walk-on. And when you look at what Dabo is saying, it is eye roll worthy because you're getting 20 more scholarship guys, and what you're going to have to do is you're going to have to get rid of 20 walk-ons. And are there diamonds in the rough that he has found? Hunter Renfro?
Yeah.
Right? That go from walk-on to a scholarship player, that they don't get that up. Yeah, that does suck.
Yeah, the other side of this, though, is now there's 21 more scholarships available for those guys across the country.
And a lot of those guys that don't get scholarships that go from walk-on to a scholarship mm-hmm. guy is what we call a preferred walk-on. And mm-hmm. those guys now, you don't have to give preferred walk-on. You give them the actual yeah. scholarship. And that is okay. What he is saying is the worst thing in his college career is the guy who just wants to be a part of the program.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just never, has he's never a love touch for the field. It. And that there is something that is going to be missing in college football because of that. Because those guys, they do it because they truly do love your university. They love you as a coach. And obviously you have a soft spot for them as their coach because of the fact if they stick around for 4 or 5 years,
walk-on, you build a relationship with those
guys. It's because of you. Yeah. You probably don't build that great of a relationship, but you have an attachment to them because the only reason why they're there is because they love your program so damn much. And they usually become like millionaires and boosters later.
Those guys, do you think there ends up being a provision for basically like a practice squad?
Ooh, that's a good question. They should do something like that.
Like a 12-man practice squad?
Yeah, where you can have just those guys that...
They can never dress. Yeah. They can never... They can be on the sideline. Can't dress them.
Because that's essentially what they do. And like the gift that you give the walk-on guys that are there for 4 or 5 years, they dress for every home game, right? Mm-hmm. But he's saying like this is the worst thing in my college, my coaching career. Dude, you don't travel those guys. Yeah. The travel limit is 70. Mm-hmm. Those guys don't go to road games with you. You leave them at home.
Not only that.
Does he say that it's the worst thing that ever happens when he has to leave them at home for every road game?
No. And beyond that, remember, this is the same guy who said he was going to retire once money got into football.
Yeah. Well, now there's a lot more money. Yeah. So I don't know. That, on one hand, I understand what you're saying, Dabo. On the other, I roll my eyes because
it's Dabo.
This is not the worst thing that's ever happened in your coaching career.
No, you're talking about 21 more kids getting scholarships. And you're talking about some kids that, in all likelihood, they can afford it anyways, to not being able to play in home games. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the difference.
And you know what that will do, though, is some of those guys that fringe preferred walk-on guys that walk on, they're going to end up going to an FBS school where, Dabo, maybe if you use the transfer portal, you'll get those guys.
Mm-hmm.
Because they'll go to... I don't know, maybe you can't play at Clemson, but you sure as heck can play at Appalachian State.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go to App State for a year, and you're like, hey, come on down. Come to where you want to be. You'll find those guys.
Crazy talk.
Yeah.
Crazy
talk. I know. It's all bananas.
All right. Well, there you go. That's your college football news and notes. When we come back, we'll put a nice little bow on today's show before we hand you off to Isaac Zook on Primetime here on Danny and Dusty, Danny the Fan.
It's time for a Blazers report on the Fan. The inside story on the Portland Trail Blazers, brought to you by Aztec Willie's Taqueria.
Oh, here we go. Portland Trail Blazers is taking on the Oklahoma City Thunder tonight. That's a fun one for you guys on the YouTube chat.
Yeah, it's a big counter in there.
Yeah, it's a big old table. They're taking on the Oklahoma City Thunder tonight. Again, a 11.5-point spread. Unclear on if Anthony Simons or DeAndre Ayton is going to give it a go tonight. I would imagine Anthony Simons is quite literally a game time decision just to see if his lungs can fill up and he can play the minutes. What that will do to the rotation is I would imagine if Anthony's back, he will be starting. The same thing will be true if DeAndre Ayton makes his return as well. Isaiah Hartenstein could make his regular season debut for the Oklahoma City Thunder. He is also a game time decision. This Trailblazers report on the Fan is brought to you by Aztec Willie's Taqueria, the best place to go before and after games or any event. Check them out on the corner of Southeast 15 and Broadway or at AztecWillies.com. As the Portland Trailblazers get ready to take on the Oklahoma City Thunder and embark on a road trip in which they're probably going to lose quite a few games, and I would imagine reality starts to set back in and some of the fun dissipates. Quick little update.
Yeah.
Cooper Flagg currently leads the Duke men's basketball team in points per game at 16.
All right.
Rebounds per game at 9.5. Assists per game at 4. Steals per game at 2. And blocks per game at 1.8. So, yes, he is quite literally leading Duke in every box score.
Well, category. And this is what I want for everybody to know. Like, you shouldn't. All these other teams just don't fall in love because he probably also leads in turnovers in the final 2 minutes of pivotal games,
which
right?
is why you should absolutely not want to.
You should not want to draft him, no matter what. No matter
26
what.
And 12 against a Kentucky team that was featuring 5 5th year seniors. Yeah. I mean, that's as a 17 year old, I mean, that's
we're
really
going to talk about this after the lottery is over. And I reserve the right to change my mind after the lottery is completed, okay? But as of right now, just don't.
You I mean, just choke artists,
yeah,
you absolute total choke.
Nobody,
artist.
Nobody should want him right now, all right. Can we need to start that? I'm gonna Kirby Smart this son of a bee. I'm gonna
in front of us.
SEC message this. I'm gonna get all the messaging out that you don't want him. It's gonna be bad. You try to trade for somebody else. Just go do that. Yeah, you don't want it.
Another little a minor update. The football jerseys for Navy, for Army Navy, are both out now.
Yeah.
I'm coming home with both.
Oh.
I'm gonna grab one of each.
Get the jerseys.
If they've got them on sale on those racks in that stadium, I'm 100% gonna grab
them. I can promise you this, they're not gonna be on sale, but they will be for sale.
Yeah.
Oh, speaking of new jerseys, I think it was a trailblazing thing that I saw with the Oregon Trail Trailblazers jerseys.
Pete Rogers.
There we go.
Yeah, I retweeted one the other day. They did a custom edit with the old Oregon Trail digital.
Yeah, and I said the only name on the back better be Dysentery.
Yeah.
Ooh.
A good one.
That's a great one. But
for those that have not seen Navy's jerseys, go to the Twitters and check them out. They went with the pirate flag Jolly Roger design, and it's a absolute banger. The Army uniforms went with
Shamrock
and a note to the Battle of the Bulge at Bastogne.
Sweet.
Just tremendous, tremendous jerseys in a matchup that you and I will take it in person.
We are going to be at, and the Friday before Army-Navy, our show will be live from Washington, D.C.
Washington, D.C.
Yeah, I'm still mad that I didn't get invited along on this trip.
Yeah. You'll be there in spirit, my man.
You will. You'll be producing while we talk to somebody.
God, I hate you guys.
I love you.
I love you.
I love you. All right, that does it for us on this Wednesday. We'll be back on a Thursday. All right? We'll have our picks tomorrow.
We will.
But up next, you got 4 hours of power. From their mouths to your ears, it's Prime Time with Isaac and Souk. Have a great Wednesday, everybody.
Bye. Shaden Schwartz.
Hey, I'm here to check your pipes.